I never confessed it. They just proved it, that's all.
Say something now?
Well, I don't know.
Okay.
Say something.
I'm Justin Thaler. You're Ken Hange.
Wow.
Yeah, that was awful.
It was. That was sort of lame, yeah. We can see if we can outwait each other.
Okay. I'm pretty sure I can. I can fall asleep right now.
This is Sleepy Thaler. No.
No, we're not going with that. I'm Justin Thaler, film critic with the Mountain Express.
And I'm Ken Hanke, the other film critic for the Mountain Express. And combined, we are...
Elitist Bastards.
Elitist Bastards, that is indeed true. We've been to the movies.
Yes. We're prepared.
We're prepared.
To talk, well, you might be prepared, I'm usually not.
I'll talk about them. I'll talk about the movies. To be off the top of my head, I would not say that I was prepared, but I'm here and willing to talk about them. And where am I?
You're at the Cinema Lounge, the Carolina Asheville.
That's true.
Hendersonville Road.
And
in a chair.
In a chair, yes. Yes, we're very modern. We have chairs now. We're allowed to have our own chair. Anyone who recognizes the lyric content there can contact me and receive no prize.
Well, you watched the...
Going the Distance movie? Yes, I did.
Now, did you go the distance, Ken?
Well, I sat through the whole damn thing.
Okay. Was
which
that
I
bad
guess
thing?
Is going the distance. It wasn't a particularly painful thing. It was a particularly uninteresting thing.
Right. Well, it's got Drew Barrymore and Justin Long in it.
Who are both likable enough. I have nothing against either one of them.
But they don't exactly scream...
No, they're not the most exciting duo on the face of the earth, and they certainly aren't exciting here. I am told that it's a romance for how we live now. However, you should see it.
Should I?
Yes.
Okay.
Because when I invite you to a driving range, I want you to be prepared for what's going to happen.
Well, I read your review, so I'm assuming I know what it,
it
means. But
yes. It was the one thing in the movie that I really, truly liked. And that was a friend of Justin Long's has taken him to a driving range and has had enough of having Justin Long text message in the middle of conversations and takes his cell phone away from him and drives it.
You know, I would like to see you use a golf club.
Would it be worth your cell phone? Would it be worth your cell phone to see this?
Yes, it would.
We are going to a driving range.
To see you do anything athletic.
I've played putt-putt before.
I'm sure you have.
Well, there you go. Anyway, the film is negligible. So let's not waste our time discussing the fact that it's your standard romantic comedy with an additional slathering of vulgarity to get it an R rating. That and a lot of Justin Long's bare bottom with and without a handprint. It's part of the plot. If you want to know why, you're going to have to watch the damn thing.
I don't really want to know why.
Oh, okay.
I'm fine with that.
So moving right along.
Yes.
What are we moving right along to?
I guess Machete. Is
that all right, we've both seen Machete.
Yes. And having not seen Going the Distance, I can safely say, regardless, that it's infinitely better. Am I correct in that assumption?
It is beyond infinitely better.
Okay.
It's I really have virtually no criticism to make of Machete. I think it is quite perfect for what it is.
Right.
But what is it?
It's absurdly over the top and gory and
You left out gratuitous nudity.
Yes, full of bad taste. It's all of those things and more.
And more.
Yes. So, if that's your kind of thing, which it's ours.
Yeah, we like that sort of thing.
Yeah, you can't go wrong.
And for anybody who is, you know, just dying to see Lindsay Lohan topless, this is also your movie.
Right. Well, Lindsay Lohan is a topless drug addict, and later a nun.
Well, I think she's merely disguised as a nun, but, you know, it's a... the image is still open. Strikingly blasphemous. Yes.
I think... I don't have problems with the film, and it's probably a movie I'm going to like more. Because when I saw it, I was pretty exhausted just from being up early.
He obviously had a wild night the night before. We won't discuss that.
No, I didn't. But anyway, my only issue, it's not even really an issue, it's just that as much as I like Danny Trejo, he's not leading man material. He works fine as that character, but it's nothing that you can really, like, attach yourself to.
In other words, you're saying what you said to me.
He's no
Antonio Banderas.
And I think that's the only thing that keeps this movie from being quite as good as a lot of Rodriguez's stuff, but that's barely a problem. Like,
well, I don't think that it's intended to be a serious contender in Rodriguez filmography for, you know, best movie I ever made. I think it's...
No.
Most explosively tasteless movie I've ever made.
Right.
And on that score, I don't see how you can fault it much.
No. And you saw The American?
Yes, I saw
last Wednesday.
The American, which opened last Wednesday, and which, much to my mystification, took the weekend box office because I liked it well enough, but if you're going to it because you think that it's a George Clooney vehicle... It's not really. And if you're going to it thinking it's an action thriller, it doesn't have that much action.
So what you're saying, it's probably not going to win the box office this weekend.
No, I expect to... Well, I don't know. What's it up against?
We'll get to that later.
Yeah. So, but, I mean, it's a good picture. It's not a great picture, I think. It's very stylized. It's George Clooney hiding out in Italy... doing that thing that, you know, and this is part of the problem of the film. He's doing that thing that if you watch even half a dozen movies, you know that doing one last job is never a good idea. And, of course, it's not a good idea here either. And that's the problem, is because it is really, it's a stylish kind of character study almost, except for the fact that you never learn anything about Clooney's character, including whether his name is Edward or Jack. But it also is really heavy on genre tropes, like the one last job, the hooker with the heart of gold, the sequence where you have something happen that... You know what this had. There's no other possible reason than the results for why he does something in the film. And as you watch it take place, it's like, oh, well, I know what's going to happen here. And, of course, it does. But on balance, I liked the film more than I didn't. Will I ever watch the film again? I doubt it very seriously.
And a movie that you reviewed, but... Hasn't come out yet.
Hasn't come out yet.
Friday.
Restrepo comes out on Friday here. Restrepo is
a National Geographic documentary.
Yeah, and
won Sundance Best Documentary.
I believe it may have. Yeah. I know that it's got this like remarkable 96% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes, including a good review from Armand White. And which is like unheard of, unless it's a really crappy movie. And in this case, Armand White has actually given a good movie a good review. I'm sure it was a mistake, but that's neither here nor there. It's a very strong documentary, which essentially is spending a year, a little more than a year actually, with a platoon in Afghanistan. And it has no agenda. If it has an agenda, I can't find it. It's neither left nor right. It just is from the soldier point of view. It's sometimes it's pretty harrowing because you realize that what you're, it's one of those things where you see somebody die and then you realize, oh, I really did just see somebody die. So it has that, it's not what I would call a pleasant picture. I think it may be an important picture in some respects. I don't think it's a perfect picture, but it definitely is something that probably should be seen. Mao's Last Dancer is a Bruce Beresford picture. Okay. It is a biopic.
Of Mao or Mao's Last Dancer?
Of Mao's Last Dancer.
Okay.
I suspect that if people will actually go watch this, they will probably end up liking it, even though it's got some serious issues. In the first place, it has an anti-China attitude in it, which would be perfectly at home in the McCarthy era. I mean, it is that subtle, or not, as the case may be. I'm not saying that it doesn't necessarily deserve it, but it gets to the point where it's, I thought I was watching Satan Never Sleeps, which if you've ever seen that, which, you know, no Chinese in a military outfit appears that doesn't hit you in the face with a rifle butt. So it's kind of on that level. But the dancing sequences are fine. The story becomes very schmaltzy, but Beresford understands schmaltz to the degree that it comes across like he's gonna buy into it himself. So by the end of the film, you've kind of bought into it. And the last section of the film pretty much redeems anything that was wrong with the first section, where it turns into what we call a crowd pleaser. And it becomes very hard not to like the ending of the film. And it also is the one place where Beresford really does something with his camera and the dancing. A lot of times the dancing is just sort of photographed. It really kind of breaks loose with this staging of Rite of Spring. And then it has an emotional moment, which is right out of Leo McCarey's Going My Way, and the fact that that was in 1944 and this is in 2010. It still works. I'm sorry, if you're human, the scenes are going to work on you. It's the kind of sap that you really just can't resist. So, you know, if you're looking for something that's entertaining, that's lighter than Restrepo, Mao's Last Dance is probably a good bet, because there sure isn't anything else coming out this weekend to exactly set your toes a-tapping.
Thursday we have Comedy of Terrors, which I've never seen.
Jacques Tourneur's film. It stars Vincent Price, Peter Lorre, Boris Karloff, Basil Rathbone, and Rhubarb, although it actually says it stars Rhubarb, but Rhubarb is really he's sometimes billed that way. Rhubarb is a cat, and the cat's name is really Orangey. But his most famous film was called Rhubarb, in which he played the title character. So, you know, you get a really, you know, nice broad range of... He was typecast after that. He always plays orange cats. I don't know why. He plays Cat in Breakfast at Tiffany's, which is probably his most moving performance, but that's neither here nor there. Anyway, this is a horror comedy, and it's a good one that could have been a great one if some of the broad stuff was a little bit less broad, and if someone had ever had the presence of mind to take Les Baxter, who recorded wrote most of the music for the American International Pictures films in the 60s. In a civilized world, this man would have been drowned at birth. He defaced, if that's a word you can use for a soundtrack, let's just say he bitched up more films in the 1960s with this incredibly bad music than anybody I can think of. Now, probably we'll get hate mail for this. This is good. You know, I'm looking forward to that. But Baxter, you know...
Well, people kept hiring him.
Well, I assume they liked him at the time. I mean, these scores didn't strike me as particularly good when I was a child, and now they're overbearing. You know, and what he lacked in compositional taste, he more than worsened in the arrangements with their wah-wah horns and their slide whistles and all those other things that are, you know, trying to convince you that what you're seeing is really funny, whether it is or not. Fortunately, a lot of this is funny, but it would be funnier without the over-emphatic musical score. But hey, you know, you get some choice moments in this. You get Boris Karloff delivering a funeral eulogy for Basil Rathbone, whose name he can't remember, and he's, you know, Mr. You Know Who. And you get Basil Rathbone as a Macbeth-quoting character who just absolutely will not stay dead. And he objects most strenuously at one point to being shoved back into the coffin, telling Messrs. Price and Laurie that he considers their actions inimical to good fellowship. But he will invariably wake up going, "What place is this?" And then it goes from there. And of course, once he actually finds himself in a crypt, in a coffin, this really displeases him. And we are running
Sunrise.
F.W. Murnau's Sunrise, a 1927 film.
It's a silent film,
but with a synchronized musical score with some sound effects. And I have seen this called the greatest film ever made. I'm not stupid enough to make a statement like that about a movie, but...
Depends on who's calling it that.
Yeah. But when it is brought up that way, if you were to say, all right, name me something better, I really can't.
Cyrus. Cyrus.
Blow me. Well, you've seen Sunrise.
Yes, I have.
I showed this to Justin once, and I don't think he ever actually told me how he felt about the film, but it was rather odd because he told me that having seen it, he felt that he understood me a great deal better. And watching it again this past weekend, I almost wonder if he understood me better for reasons that don't actually relate to the film. But I'll discuss that with him at some other point.
Well, it's been a while since I've seen it, so yeah. I'd have to watch again. But
well, the thing about it is, though, is I noticed there were some things in it that are in films of mine that you've seen, and those films were made before I had seen this.
Okay. So, but would at the same time, would this film have influenced people who influenced you?
Oh, almost certainly, yes. I mean, it really is an amazing film, and it's amazing from a technical standpoint. It's one of the few films where I understand, and most of the time when people, you know, piss and moan about the, you know, the death of the silent picture, I'm just like, no, I really, you know, I'll be honest with you, I prefer talkies. This, however, is a film that I think could only exist as a silent film. I think the intrusion of dialogue would probably just completely destroy this film. Things that I think are fine as concepts, I think if you tried to put them into dialogue, would be horrible. They would be laughable. They would be absurd. But you don't have that problem because you don't actually hear what these characters are saying to each other. But the whole thing is also just a technical, fascinating technical thing. And their touches that, I mean, it's like there's nothing that is left to chance. Everything is just a little bit more than it needs to be. When the city woman is trying to convince the man to come to the city, with sell his farm and come to the city with her. What he's going to do there, who knows? We never get to that part. But he mentions his wife, and she says, couldn't she just get drowned? And when the title is on the screen, instead of it just being your regular intertitle, after she says it, the words kind of sink off the screen like they're going underwater. I mean, everything has it just a little bit neater than it needed to be. And the result is quite astonishing. It also has an amazing emotional kick in things that, looked at dispassionately, you would go, oh, no, this is too corny for words. But it's never corny, and I'm not 100% sure why, although I think part of it is a performance of George O'Brien as the man, who it is one of the most fearless performances I've ever seen, and there is nothing else in this man's filmography. He's a cowboy star, for God's sake. There's nothing else in his filmography that would suggest that he would do a movie like this or that he could do it. It really is quite a remarkable film. Do you think it's remarkable?
Yes.
Justin thinks it's remarkable, so we're of one mind here. We are in accord.
Able to remark on it.
He did remark. And he does not actually think Cyrus is better than it.
No. I'm just saying somebody...
Somebody will, yes. And yeah. We can probably put a name to that, too.
We have Restrepo, which we talked about.
And Restrepo is opening this weekend,
Mao's
which we've already talked about.
Dancer.
And Mao's Last Dancer, which we've already talked about. And there's something that might be opening called The Virginity Hit, which, however, it's listed as being in wide, but so far this week, thank you, Labor Day, I have not seen any listings that include it, which makes me suspect that we may have dodged the bullet. And if we haven't, well... We know who will be seeing The Virginity Hit.
And we know who will be watching Resident Evil.
Afterlife 3D. Yes. D. Yes, I will be watching that.
3D Mila Jovovich.
Yes, and we will, and then I will be able to report to you on just exactly and specifically which of her body parts she shows unclothed this time.
There
I believe that is the... primary interest in these films. It cannot be more stupid slicing and dicing of zombies, can it?
Well, I mean, what else are they going to do?
Well, that's about all you can do with zombies for an hour and a half, I guess so.
Is it zombies in this one?
They're kind of zombies. They're created by that virus that the Umbrella Corporation... Don't make me reveal that I know too much about these things, because I have seen all of them. And I'm
not
proud of it.
I saw the first two. I never saw the third one.
I don't even remember. Was the third one that was in Las Vegas?
Yeah, they're in the desert.
Oh, that was negligible. Okay.
Well, and the other two weren't?
It was even more negligible.
Okay.
But at least with this one, the director of the first film, the renowned Paul W.S. Anderson, is back at the helm.
Well.
The man who gave you Alien versus Predator. Doesn't that make you want to rush right out to a cinema?
What's going to make you rush right out?
No, I'm going to kind of slither in there after the press screening of I'm Still Here.
Okay.
Kind of ooze.
And I guess that's it for us this week.
It appears to be it.
I'm Justin Souther.
Yeah, he is.
And you're Ken Hange.
Yeah, I am.
We're Mountain Express Film Critics, and this has been brought to you by the fine folks.
At the Mountain Express, yes. And we are also Elitist Bastards.
Right.
And the podcast was, as usual, produced, cohered, and put up with by Steve Shanafelt.
And taped in front of a live studio audience of one.